My name is Norman Barrichello. Why I'm here, I think Wilbert's explained that they brought in a biologist to try to interpret some of the information that's being sent to them. As you can see by the presentation, that this is very much a science-based process, and it's very difficult for people to comprehend what's being told them. I just want to give you a little bit of background, if I could. I've been a biologist for 20 years, and then I've worked for First Nations, primarily one, for another 20 years, so I feel privileged that I have the advantage of learning from elders as well as understanding some of the science. I was over here back in the mid to late 70s, and I was I worked for the what was then the Fish and Wildlife Service. I actually worked for Debbie's dad, and of interest, I was attending meetings over in the East Arctic, and back then there was the decline of the Kaminuri occurred, and which then became, I think, a decline a little later was observed of the Beverly herd, and of course, the discussion, the issues, they're very much the same as they were back then. And I'm just a little surprised. 40 years has passed. We're still not, it seems to me that it's still a science-driven process, despite the treaties, despite the Wildlife Act and the commitments. And I really think we're missing a real opportunity to learn from each other and not try on more community-based management. It strikes me when I hear the preamble of the presentation, the need for collaboration, and from what I've seen, it's really a need for harvest data. I don't really see the collaboration, and I need only read the papers, and I don't see where traditional knowledge is used to give us greater knowledge of caribou. I don't see local knowledge. It's really a science-driven process, and it causes major controversy, as you can see. I want to first start by the question of managing caribou by herds. I don't think we're very satisfied that this is the standard practice across North America, Alaska, and Canada. If you look at the graphs and you look at the populations of caribou on the endangered species list, one could argue that the strategy hasn't worked. You can defend yourself, no doubt, but still, I think we should be thinking of other ways to manage caribou. If you took management back to the community, you would be getting far more information, far more support, and we wouldn't be arguing about numbers. We would probably be looking more at trends. And on that point, being imaginative as to how you might count caribou, or your primary interest is what's happening to them. Are they going up or down? And for example, perhaps you could look at the density of caribou on the core calving area and measure the extent of the calving ground, and maybe from year to year, that could tell you some information about any kind of trend in numbers. I want to briefly talk about radio callers because they're part and parcel with the problem. Radio callers, to me, should very much be prohibited. It's the most severe kind of harassment, which is contrary to the Wildlife Act and it's contrary to DENA laws. Appreciate you've got an exemption under the Wildlife Act, but I think as a matter of ethics, we should be thinking of other ways to track animals. And again, if you go to the communities, so much of that information could be acquired if it was done right. So I would encourage ENR to think about other approaches to manage caribou without the deployment of radio callers. I also think there should be a little more attention to protecting cultural practices. I'm sure when participants of the treaty signed the agreement, they expected those practices to be protected, and I see nothing really in the presentations about how these practices should be protected. When I asked the first question about what's the status of the population, I'm a little confused. The real data that I see being used is...
Excuse me, Norm.
When I look at the actual data that's going into the extrapolations and the predictions, it's principally composition surveys on the calving ground, looking at the ratios of breeding to non-breeding cows and the ratio of yearlings to cows. You've got fall ratios, and I believe you have an early winter ratio again. It's composition data. There's the survival of collared caribou that gives you some indication of survival rates. And then, of course, you collect harvest data, but by your own admission, it's questionable, so really doesn't conform to the rigors of a science approach. If I look at the 2015 data from the calving grounds, just simply looking at ratios and no extrapolations of caribou observed, it seems to me we've got 25 yearlings per 100 cows, and those cows include two-year-olds, which are non-breeders. So it's hard for me to understand how pregnancy rates are falling off the map and survival rates are falling off the map when we've got that level of recruitment. That when you put 2 years pull 2 years out year olds out of that, it should be close to 30, I'm guessing, which is very near your vital statistic. If you look in the fall ratios, we have 35 calves per 100 bulls, and I'm not sure where the yearlings are, but you've got yearlings and 2 year olds as part of that cow number, I presume. So it, if you take them out, the ratio should be fairly impressive for the fall. And if the recruitment is as good as the composition data makes it appear, one could assume that cow survival rates are relatively good, because of course the calves are far more vulnerable than the cows. That's why they're with the cows. This all makes me question the derivation of some of the estimates that become the facts, and it's the facts that are driving the show, and I just have some problem knowing how these connect. If you hear local observations, and if in talking to the veterinarian, it sounds to me like the caribou are in relatively good shape, from all accounts I've heard, again, which would suggest that they may well be on the road back. So those are some of my sort of, I guess, questions around the determination of the population. If we look at what's causing the decline, by your own admission and by all the talk, it's very complicated. We've got weather, which you see is probably the primary factor that's probably caused the disappearance of caribou and certainly impairing its recovery. You've got climate change patterns, which introduce all sorts of events, as you know, snow and wind changes, and the willows creeping up north. You've got wildfires. They don't just burn habitat, they bring in moose, and moose bring in wolves, and so you've got that whole dynamic that's changing. So it's very complicated, and it strikes me from the presentations that, I think as Walter said, that we're really directing all our attention to harvest rather than figuring out how we can figure out what's going on. And again, I'll make a plug for community-based management, because that's where you're going to get the kind of insights into what's really going on the ground. As I mentioned, the harvest data has been singled out, but I don't see much supportive information as to how it's implicated in any of this. And I guess I'm curious as to how harvest is today a serious issue, when years ago I suspect that many more caribou were harvested when dog teams were being fed and when communities were hunting caribou and moving with them more. And it just is a surprise to me to think that caribou is the driving feature here. The projected trends, again, I think we have to all agree that it's a very complicated issue with various factors at play and integrating with each other. You've got climate change, which is introducing more variability. Hard to believe why there would be any development on a calving ground when that's presumed that the drying of the land is having a very adverse effect on summer range and probably most particularly calving areas, I'm guessing. The survival rates, to me, I'm just not convinced, but then I haven't gone through the kind of work that might be required to go through the analysis, because it's very complicated. As I said, the recruitment rates are hard to fathom, how the caribou's not losing ground when the calving ground composition looks fairly good. And I just think there's probably a tendency to look at this in a very arithmetic way, that we can manage harvest. And if it's part of a very simple math, that if you shoot a cow, it won't produce a calf. And I think we've got to do a better job of understanding caribou. And I would encourage all of us maybe to think about how we would reset management. Start to think about a whole multitude of trends that we should be looking at. I think the communities should be very much engaged in all of this. I think ENR provides a very helpful contribution by bringing science to the table, but I don't think science should be driving the decisions. I think it should be a collaborative approach, as I think was intended under the treaty. And I think at the end of the day, when you start to pool knowledge, I think we're going to be in far better shape to both understand what's happening and know how to respond to the factors that are important. So, merci.
Merci. Any response from ENR? You want to go ahead? Or do you want to respond? And then we got another question from you later.
Okay, Linda Young for ENR. I'm not going to respond. There was a lot of stuff in there, so I'm not going to respond to tolls, and I'm not the technical expert to do that. But I would like to make a couple of points. The first one about including community ways of doing things and traditional ways of managing. I think that for us, the Delaunay plan that's been put forward is a really good example of how that can be done and working collaboratively. So yes, our information is very science heavy. I have a table of scientists with me. The point about needing to work better with communities to include different kinds of knowledge is well taken, and we agree with that completely. I think for us, the beauty of the Delaunay plan is We have provided some information here about what we see happening in terms of numbers, and the Delaney plan then takes that and moves it into, okay, and this is how we're going to deal with it as a community. I think that shows great leadership and a very creative way of dealing with things. And frankly, that's not what we're here for. That's not our job. We're not the implementers in the community. We're providing information for the board to make a decision and some recommendations. But it's critical that in moving forward and what to do with that information, we work with communities and communities implement that. Mr. Barakel, you had a lot of comments, very specific comments about approaches, and maybe I could suggest that rather than take time here, because some of them would, I imagine, result in some very technical discussions back and forth about different ways things are done. If we could get them in writing, some of those comments, perhaps we could respond to some of the more technical questions technical issues that you've raised. And certainly with respect to how to involve communities and find different ways of collecting information and viewing information and understanding that information, yes, we agree. That's an important thing to do, and we would like to move towards that. So we're not in any way saying, we are not in any way saying we know everything, we know everything, and we know what's going on, because it definitely needs all kinds of information and all kinds of views coming to the table to work together.
Excuse me, Wilbur, for a sec. My name is Paul Latour. I'm just going to sit in as the chair here on a very temporary basis while Mr. Nayeli is out of the room. What I'm hearing here is an undertaking from Colville Lake to supply a series of questions to ENR. So I would ask that you do that as an undertaking. It would be, I guess, undertaking number one through the board, and then we'll direct them out from there. Yep. Question, Wilbur?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just got one more question. I just forgot to ask that one about the... You were talking about the wolves and that you want to cut the numbers down, but for us, wolves is important for us because to keep the caribou healthy. I was keeping the caribou moving, and when you get rid of that balance, what happens then? And for us, when we see that and the caribou gets sick, the wolves will kill it right away, and that sickness would never spread. If you know the caribou got sick and spread that sickness right away, the caribou will die faster in a big number. So those kind of things you should really look at before you start killing so many wolves or start putting bounties on it. You really have to look at it before you start doing that or working with First Nations. I know some First Nations have asked, maybe they think that it would help, but if you're out there, you don't see that. And people, the way to control that is to be on the land. When you're on the land, the caribou comes around where you are and the wolves stay away. Right now, the wolves are just having a field day because there's nobody out there. So those kind of things we see, and I'm sharing that with you right now. And maybe we have to work together more to try to control that, not to wipe out the wolves, but kind of control it more and maybe trying to get people out there more. And when I seen that, I didn't agree on that. They wanted to do a bounty on wolves, so... I just forgot to mention that, so I wanted to mention it to you while you're here, to ENR and maybe the board, something to consider and work together more moving forward. Merci.
Go ahead, John.
Thank you, Chairman. Just, I wondered if you could just respond to one question, then the question on why the calving ground, ground composition doesn't jive well with the conclusions you've drawn. Merci.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Jan Adamczewski with ENR. You raised a number of issues, Norm, and I guess we'll be following up with some further questions and so on. The calving photo survey that we use has been around, the basic methodology has been around for 30-some years now. It was originally developed in the 1980s, and the big improvement at that time of year was to bring a photo plane in for those areas that have higher numbers, because it's a little bit hard for people to count them when they're at larger numbers, you know, just by looking out the window of the airplane. But the methodology is fairly well established, and the method doesn't account for the entire herd, because the entire herd is not on the calving ground. So then we have these corrections that we use to try to account for the animals that are not on the calving ground. But the methods have been well established. There's some published papers. So I think we feel fairly safe that we're seeing a real trend on that calving ground, because we're using a very consistent methodology year after year. In terms of the composition survey on the calving ground, the main purpose of that is to establish, like the photo plane and the visual blocks will give you the numbers of caribou that are at least 1 year old or older on the survey area. The point of the composition survey is to give a cross-section of what's actually there. So there are cows that are pregnant and give birth. There are some that do not give birth. There are some yearlings. There are some young bulls. So it's basically to refine that number so that we get a more exact number of breeding cows on the calving ground. So that's where that composition survey fits in. You mentioned at one point the size of the calving area and the survey area. Each herd is a little bit different, and with Blue Nose East, the calving distribution, even though the herd is much reduced, is still fairly large on the landscape. What we've seen with the Bathurst herd over towards Bathurst Inlet is that herd is at even lower numbers, and the size of the calving ground where most of those cows are keeps on shrinking. So every year from 2012, 2015, 2009, that calving area just keeps getting smaller and smaller. So there is a relationship there for at least that herd. But what we have found with the Blue Nose East herd is that they tend to be somewhat more dispersed on the calving ground. The calving ground is quite a bit bigger. But we do monitor those things in each survey as well. I don't know if that at least addresses some of your points, Mr. Barrichello.
Yeah, thank you, Jan, and thank you, Mr. Chair. It strikes me that the composition work that you're doing on the calving ground is pretty good information. And it seems to me, if you can start to think about how those become indicators of what might be happening, you probably will be left in the same spot you're at in terms of where the herd is going. Understanding, as you said, that it's complicated because the calving areas change. Some animals aren't in the calving ground. So it struck me as very valuable information that doesn't jive with the conclusions you've drawn. And whether it was collected for another purpose, it still seems to me good data to do an assessment on the trend in the caribou population. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Jan Anamczewski with ENR. Just to clarify, Mr. Barrichello, the survey reports that we put together for each of those surveys, they're long and they're detailed, and there's more technical information in there than we would certainly want to put in front of a hearing like this. But those survey reports do have all that detailed composition information, and part of what our statistician modeler, Mr. Boulanger, does is he has a population model, and the composition information goes into the model so that it helps in a kind of an overall assessment of where the herd is at and what you would find in the survey report, which has been made available to the board, is essentially he's tracking all the components of the herd, so the cows, the bulls, the yearlings, the calves. With the use of the population model, you can kind of integrate all of the information that we have from the survey itself. So there's plenty of technical detail there if you are interested in pursuing it.
Yeah, I know you asked a lot of questions, Marm. I don't know if all your questions were answered.
Well, I think thank you, Mr. Chair. I understood that there would be further discussion with ENR to answer some of the technical questions. I guess I just want to emphasize the big concern I have is that when you're producing a lot of models and using a lot of analytical approaches, it would be nice to ensure that what you see on the ground matches what your models say, and that's the big question. And again, I can go to models and try to decipher the analytical approach, but at the end of the day, it's the same thing. Do the caribou on the ground match what the model is predicting? And that's not apparent to me. Thank you.